Welcome to Dark Guidance. I'm Chris.
I'm Brian.
I'm Tom.
And we're back after the WTC, and, you know, we all had a pretty good time.
Nope.
Most of us had a pretty good time. Some of us got saddled with lists that basically were hodgepodge held together things, and some of us did, you know, pretty well at the WTC.
Nah.
Fair. Oh, man. Well, it's been a couple of weeks, and I figured, you know, like with every other bloody podcast under the sun, we should probably talk about our experiences in the WTC. I definitely didn't expect to win it again, spoiler alert, but here we are.
I learned that pierogies are really good.
Pierogies are excellent.
Excuse me.
I don't know. Like, the best part about that trip was every time we would, like, go out and pay things, and then people would just start referring to, like, Zaladius as a Monopoly money.
Yeah, that was really shitty of us, that whole trip, but you looked at it and you're just like, okay.
Yeah. Well, you're like, oh man, 40 zlotys, that's like 20 bucks.
Not
maybe
even.
10 bucks.
It's like 15.
Yeah,
give or take.
Like, okay, well, I guess I'll buy this expensive bottle of vodka. Take it home.
That led so many people astray the night before the WTC.
Oh yeah. That was an adventure, I'll tell you as much.
Yeah.
Check that out on the premium content.
That actually is legit premium content. We are definitely not a liability to discuss.
Yeah.
Most certainly.
So we should go to the stuff we are probably allowed to discuss, which is, well, basically, Tom, you weren't really meant to be on a team. So what happened to you?
So I was originally supposed to just be a commentator on the Polish stream. And I was, like, pretty excited for it. And then around Thursday night, I found out that one of the USA players on Team Edison?
Yep.
Let's go with Edison.
It's right, Edison.
So one player on Team Edison had some issues he had to take care of, so he had, like, emergency fly home. And then they were looking for someone to fill in. And then at that point, I was like, sure, why not? I'll play. This was, like, me assuming, like, we'll have, like, all the mobs, and I'll get to play, like, because, like, the WTC, there's like, a... you can't switch players, but you have to, like, submit, like, a substitute originally. That team did not. So I would just have to play his list, which was, like, pretty good. It was, like, a feedback to this primal pair, which Jack wrote, which was pretty good.
And if you're on a list that Jack didn't write...
Yeah. Come Friday morning, when we get to the menu, I find out that we actually don't have any models. But yeah, like, not even just models. We actually don't have anything to, like, play with. Like, we don't have, like, tape measure or anything. So, like, it was pretty frantic day on Friday to, like, find all the things we need. And at around, like, 4 p.m. Friday, we found, like, 1.5 units of Warmongers, one Hellmouth, a Blightbringer, a Typhon, a Seraph, and, like, a Spellmarter, and then, like, Amok, the caster attachment, and that's it. Like, we literally could not find any more primal terror models, and they weren't even painted. So at that point, like, what the WTC committee said to, like, the team was, like, we have to, like, submit three versions of the list that we have model access to, and then they'll pick a list that I get to play. But because the models are not painted, our team will be penalized by letting the opponent's team choosing if they want tables or bad. So, also, Saturday morning, there's some vendors selling, like, tokens. So I was able to, like, buy some tokens, and I had, like, my own set of dice on me from playing Magic. But there was no tape measure. So there was no, like, tape measure throughout the event, and because everyone only brought one. And then I basically played the event eyeballing most of it.
We get some good old Mark 1 or Mark 2 action in here.
No. Mark 2, you could track control. I was literally just, like, looking at it. And then, because, like, if you have to, like, use, like, I had, like, access to, like, the matching stick set that the Frozen Forge was selling. But, like, if you have to do that for, like, all the things you have, it's, like, takes more time. And I couldn't be bothered to do that. But, like, I wasn't meant to play. I didn't even have a good list. So I was just like, you know, we're just gonna eyeball most things and then, like, look at it, and then, like, my opponents, we're the, like, a pretty competitive fan, and then they're obviously gonna check for me, so. So, like, there wasn't, like, any, like, none of us, like, had any issues like between six rounds I played. So that was pretty good. And the team lost like the first round because I forgot like five rules on my models. And then after that I was like super angry, so I like read all my cards and like start playing, actually focusing. So I was able to actually end the round going 5-1, which was like pretty. It sounds really good, but it's like actually, I was super disappointed.
I don't know. Can you tell us the list again? What was it? Blightbringer, Thagrosh won, and you won list.
So it was a single list because we couldn't buy any more models. It was Thagrosh 1 and Primal Terrors with the 1-3 card because we couldn't buy any more models to get 3 points. So it was Thagrosh 1, a Blightbringer, a Typhon, a Stera, Amok, the Caster Attachment, 2 units of Warmonger, 1 with the UA, 1 Hellmouth, and 1 Spell Martyr, which I believe was the whole list.
Yep. I think that would... I think that in this case, all I can hear and all I can see is just a lot of ways to deliver Thagrosh to someone's face, which I'm pretty sure is how you played that.
We don't need to go into too many details of battle reports, but, like, because I'm playing, the list is, like, when you put Typhon and Seraph in the list, you're trying to go face on somebody, but, like, Thagrosh doesn't really, like, facilitate that in any ways. So, like, you just have, like, this, like, medium random 3 boosted sprays to try to kill something.
Yeah.
But, like, Typhon's 20 points, so he's, like, terrible for attrition, because he's only, like, Pal 17, 1-inch melee, no Pathfinder. So, like, whenever he goes in, he's fading down. And, like, Thagrosh has a fee to bring it back, but, like, everyone has RSP in their list. So it's, like, super unreliable. And on top of that, because I'm playing Primal Tears, which, like, the list is supposed to, like, attrition, but because I only had, like, 2 units of Warmongers, so I just had, like, not enough models to attrition anyone.
Yeah.
I had, like, that build, like, optimized list for the WTC. So I had to, like, basically look at every round, like, all right, I'm going in with an attrition list that doesn't really want to play the long game, and then my short game is not that great either because I'm playing Thagrosh, and he doesn't really facilitate, like, assassinations that well, so I have to, like, really, like, hijink some, like, wins, like, out of, like, nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, one of the, like, some funny moments in the WTC was... the Hellmouth had to pull 2 beasts out of Bradagus' control area for me to, like, kill Bradagus with Thagrosh and Typhon. And then
Can't half the beasts be, like, you know, immune to pushes?
Yeah, well, no, we pulled the ones that could be pushed.
Whoops.
So the funny thing is, right, like, World Guardians at the beginning of Mark 3 could not be pushed.
Yep.
But they changed this so it works with Bradagus' speed. Which also simultaneously made it useless against Hellmouth.
Yep, I remember that, because it was like bad, and then everyone complained because everyone wanted the World Guardian to be useful as an anti-control piece.
Yeah, so that was pretty funny, and then I killed Dreamer, where she had access to 2 Shield Guards, the Sacrifice, and the Arcane Vortex Beast, the Cage Razor,
mm-hmm.
which took a lot of work, but I was able to do that on top 2. And then besides that, like I at some point, because my list, I only have 1 list, like most, like at day 2 of WTC, like most things are going to be bad matchups. So at some point, I just like, you know what, they're all bad, so I just take 1 of the bad ones. So I was put into like Terminus, Ghostly, and then Chaos 2 Exemplar Interdiction. And through, like, some very medium positioning at the grinding, I was able to, like, attrition out, like, fully functioning list. Which I think it was like, the micro.
I would not recommend it, no. I don't think anyone would recommend it, given what your bloody lists look like. But I guess there is one thing. If you go in... to match up in the WTC, and you know you're behind, you also start playing differently to how you would in a steamroller, I find. This is more on the level than just your game, in general.
Yeah, shout out to Jack from this podcast once in a while, making all my... You look at the list I had to play, and then, like, downgraded all the matches, like, where where usually it's like a good matchup, he like downgraded that by like two colors. Because it was like really, really mean, questionable.
Yeah. Well, congrats to Tom for making, well, frankly, anything out of that pair. And by pair, I mean that one listing caster.
Yeah, probably quoted it as a weight training for practice, in case they wanted to play again.
Weight training for a Storm Raptor, lovely.
Yeah. Moving on to people who had a better team record. Brian.
What team? How did your team do?
I think we like came in like 21st.
Sorry?
23rd?
I think Edison came 21st.
Then yours did better than we did.
Alright, speaking of people with better team composition, Brian.
So I took the Vlad 2 Victor with the AoE carriage.
Assault chariot.
Yeah, that's it. And then I took Butcher 1 with in a armored core with the same carriage and Ruin and a Marauder, and then Bombardiers. I dropped that once in the tournament. I lost the game, but that was also probably because I had never played into Citrixus before and made the inappropriate choice, and I should have dropped Vlad. Butcher never saw the table again and never really saw the opportunity to drop it again, because I learned after that match that anybody who had Gatsby 3 was not dropping it into me,
yeah.
Which means I had no reason to have Butcher in the list other than to scare Gatsby 3 players away from that list. Which is fine.
To people that doesn't, like, are not familiar, why are people afraid to drop players in the Butcher 3?
Butcher 1.
Oh, Butcher 1. Yeah,
because even if you kill half the list, he can kill your Slayers.
Okay.
It's still a game. It depends if I go first and some other like small and table and how the table's set up, but it's a game that they'd rather avoid because they think their other list will do better because it doesn't get automatic, because the armor is the big reason why Slayers are almost as effective as they are, plus the speed. And because Butcher's list can actually reach out and touch you if I go first with the Bombardiers, even at armor 21, their dice, I can still do some serious damage on the turn.
Excellent. Also, I just wanted to say, I feel like the overall, like, the big teams this year have, like spread out their, like, players, like, their top players with, like, different teams. So I feel like even though it was still, like, a really competitive tournament, but it didn't feel as top-heavy as, like, some of the other years I played in. What do you think, first?
Yeah, like, my team, for instance, I would say, like, player-wise, we probably weren't as stacked as we were the last time we went to the WTC in 2016.
No.
No, but then, like, I don't think we could be. I would actually disagree for some of the teams. I think the Canadians stacked their team. I think the English, to some degree, did as well. I say that and all, but I remember they were saying like there was a bit of a split there with the English. I know that that's definitely true for a lot of the other teams. I will say that I think the field in general was a lot more competitively minded in any case.
Yeah. I felt like the median was a lot higher than like top. Where usually like my previous experience of prepping for WTC was like, right, there's like these like at least like 5 to 10 teams are like super like high-end top tier, and then like there's some team that's like kind of newish, so it's like not as super competitive. But now I feel like all the teams are kind of close to each other, like yeah. Super like mid-rangey. So that's kind of cool to see.
Agreed. Like stuff like the Welsh team, for instance. I was like non Jenkins team. I was like quite surprised how they were going compared to last year or the other years. They actually did really damn well. The Czech, like, there's always obviously. From every time we've gone to WTC, there's always some surprise country that does super well, and you're like, what the hell are these guys doing there? And, like, in this year, it was the Czech Republic, which we nearly played in the finals, right?
Yeah.
And they went 2-3 against the Polish team. We ended up playing in the finals, and, like, that was semi out of nowhere, but you look at it, and you're like, actually, a bunch of their players have been traveling around a lot, and several of the other European guys were practicing with them a fair bit. So it just happens, right? There's always going to be some... Like, a couple of teams will have... Like, it always depends on the run. Like, sometimes you get teams that just have a garbage run, and then they're out, and then they're like, ugh.
Yeah, that was last year. I felt like a lot of the top teams just ran aground really early in the first two rounds.
Yeah.
So by, like, round three, everybody was playing against each other in the drinking bracket.
Yeah, pretty much.
It was pretty exciting, actually, to, like, round two, USA... Rockefeller played England Roses, which I thought was like a really good matchup, like pretty early in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really close. It involved like him. It came down to Harvey having to cataclysm Amon, and like if he tough, that was been all over the U.S.
Oh damn! That was what happened.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah, yeah. It was super competitive, like super early, which was really fun to watch.
Well, I can actually get into that a bit. We'll get into my experiences, because I played on Flamin Galahs. Since this question came up, a galah is an Australian...
parrot.
More like a cockatoo type of thing.
That's like a parrot.
It's not like a fucking parrot.
Yeah, like cockatoos are like fucking parrots with a fucking, like...
Nobody knows what a cockatoo is.
Thank you.
Just say it's a parrot.
Thank you.
Just say parrot.
And a Flamin Galah is a bloody idiot.
Okay.
Anyway, like, I will be honest, like, because we went fucking really damn well, and by that I mean we went undefeated, so good to go us, but our run was hard, and I was thinking, oh, maybe they're giving us an easy run or something, but we never 5-0'd any team, and I don't think there was a lot of rounds that we just 3-2'd and we squeaked through. Now, we put a lot of practice into this year, just basically prepping for the WTC and just doing all our homework. And I think it really paid off, because all the rounds, we basically got the 3-2s. We got the 3-2s we kind of wanted. We had a bit of leeway there, but there were a couple of lists I reckon that we sort of didn't see coming, but end of the day, we still did pretty well into. The big one actually would be Satixus. I was surprised at how much there were and how effective it was. But when you think about it, and this is something people should take home, WTC events, they tend to try and make the tables matter, so picking tables is actually quite relevant, and that means a lot of your tables have very skewed terrain. This is very good if you have a list that's fast and can abuse terrain. So, for instance, my captain, Peter Bates, was playing Ostrom. Ostrom is fantastic at abusing forests and shit like that with his feet. So Dix's Raiders are somewhat similar. You can basically get a lot of, like, edges and stuff by using the terrain to your advantage, and we found that in a lot of cases where the Raiders went first, between their ambushing Blood Witches and the speed of their Raiders going forward, they could box you in and put you in a serious bind, and then get up in control points really early.
Yeah, so that's how I lost to them.
Yeah, as for what it's worth, like, one of my teammates, Jeff Galea, he played into Cricks 4 times, I believe. And he went first twice. Coincidentally, he also won 2 games.
Were they the games he went first?
Yeah. Surprise, surprise. But, like, there was, like, the first round he went into, we were playing the finish, and he went into Raiders, and I believe he lost first turn. He was like, holy shit, his like, list was just on the back table. His AFG was pretty much parked within his deployment zone, because it had to do work immediately. And he did all right, but we were playing on Mirage that scenario, and, you know, all right doesn't cut it when your opponent just suddenly slams a bunch of guys onto the table and goes up 4 control points or some shit like that.
I did not enjoy that scenario. I felt like it was, like, very, very aggressively, what's that word I'm looking for? It just felt like it was, like, super, I was very tuned for, like, it kind of felt like a Mark II.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Mirage's problem to me is that once the ball starts rolling on that one, it just is like a runaway snowball, really. It's really hard to catch up if your opponent just blitzes you for 3 points. Like, one way or another, there's so much inevitability, you really have to go for the kill, but a lot of times you can't, because the Warcaster is often parked in the enemy zone, because they have no reason to come forward. Especially, like... So, for my part, I played Erosk 2 and Vlad 2, and a couple of people asked basically what my Krixdrop was. The answer was actually both of them. So, this was a funny one. We discovered during testing that Erosk has a exceptional matchup into Satixus... Scar 1 Banes, which was a very popular list at the WTC. And it really doesn't seem to make any sense until you think of, actually, how much work does a Wraith Engine really do? And you're like... It'll kill maybe 3 Winterguard, maybe 4.
No, that list is very good at playing into that list.
Yeah.
Also, Power 12 guns are a thing, and Power 12 sprays are a thing, and, yeah.
Power 12, fire for affected, mini-feeding, Winterguard are a thing.
Yeah.
I had one guy...
When you say that list is good into that list, you mean, like, a rush is good into Star?
Not necessarily just that. Like, the list itself has just so much, But he just has a lot of good tools that aren't immediately obvious. So a lot of the times, I dropped into at least one... I dropped into one Crix play who definitely was just like windmill slam Scar and then immediately regretted it after the game played out. And to be fair, he had me on the back foot. He went first.
What was his pair?
I think it was Slayers. I'm not sure, though.
Okay. Because Slaughterfleet likes that list, doesn't it?
Correct. He was not playing it with Slaughterfleet, I would say as much. But yeah, he went first. He scored like 2 to 3 points on the bottom of two or top of two. No, top of three. And in general, he was me on the back foot of scenario, and I didn't pass a single bloody tough check, and yet I still managed to table him and get up on scenario, and it was really damn brutal by the end.
How many models are in that list, Chris?
57 Wintergard, Erosk, 2 Orjax, so call that 60, and Elixir and some Risen. So 70 plus however many Risen you make.
77 models.
For anyone that knew Chris, that this was just like a list in very, very much in his wheelhouse. Like, basically his success at Mark II just is this list, except you trade out the Rockets for Iron Man.
Yep.
I played this list going in forward. It's a very good list. I won many games with that list. I just don't like playing it.
Mm.
But I can definitely see its value on the table.
It's a legit... Yeah, like
Brian wins with list, you know it's good.
Thanks, Tom.
RIP.
Yeah.
Well, legitimately speaking, like people say, like, oh, this is a hard list, this is a hard cast to play, blah, blah, blah. This is one of the few ones I've felt that's actually the case. It's actually really hard to pilot that many Wintergard. Not without being sloppy, and without, basically, when you've got time pressure involved...
Don't time yourself.
And also remembering all your random outs, because there are a lot of random janky outs and they're not immediately obvious. Like, a lot of times the correct answer is just to shoot in combat with your aiming fire-affected gun, and then also remembering to move your little dude-mans up, the loaders, because they just have randomly blunderbusses, and if they shoot the knockdown guy, what was happening is, like, I was flaring stalkers and knocking them down with field guns and doing other stuff like that, and then C-ratting them with just... all the Wintergard, and that was usually how it
was. That's the most time-effective way to run the list as well, is just C-Rat for days.
Yeah, pretty
much. Don't worry about doing individual shots if you don't need to, because you do more damage and you're more accurate that way.
Yeah.
Plus it saves time.
Plus it's just faster. And I paired it with, to be honest, it's a list I'm still not fully, like, grasp the matchups, because there's a lot of random matchups that would win on just bullshit, frankly. When you have that many models, you can play scenario... in a really weird way, because your models are still quite dangerous, but because you've got so many of them, your opponent has to respect them, unless they have Golak, and then you're just waiting for them to roll a 4. Or, frankly, Maxwell Finn, in which case you're just like, okay, you really have to die, or else I'm in for a bad time.
Trash fire is still fire.
It is, yeah.
It'll still burn you.
Yeah, I was actually more impressed by your Vlad list. Like, that looks like a list. That actually is like a list I actually want to play.
Yeah,
Vlad. Like, playing a bunch of garbage, man, it's not really what I want to do. But the Vlad list actually looks really fun.
Yeah, that was my final cook after. Like, God, you should see how many iterations of Vlad I went through, because I went through fucking. It might actually be hundreds, but it was a lot.
Chris, I teamed with you 2 WTCs ago. I remember. I know.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, yeah. I'll put it this way. So Vlad, basically, that Vlad list was designed with fighting slayers in mind, but in general, it was just like my all-comers drop into pretty much anything. I felt really comfortable playing into whatever. It has a nice mixture of rules and just, frankly, a lot of flexibility, which is exactly what I liked. It was a funny fact. The fact I paired it with Erosk 2 meant that in 2 rounds I played into Old Witch and Grimkin, Old Witch 3. I've never actually, to be honest, played against Old Witch 3 in Grimkin, but I've personally played a lot of Old Witch 2 in Kador. And that
we played Grimkin into Old Witch 2. Yeah. That's what happened.
Yeah, correct. And that meant I knew how she sort of worked, and a lot of people were just like got fixated on the blind and. Between carpet bombing areas with, like, what was it, Windstorm, which is just an incredibly good spell in this current meta, especially with Judicator on the scene, and having really long threat ranges, you can control a lot of huge bases, and since huge bases are quite popular, you know, you basically have some good outs there. Honestly, like, playing Vlad is just really, it's honestly, it's just really fun. You defeat a lot of dice skews because you have boosts on models that shouldn't have boosts.
And the Hand of Fate.
And Hand of Fate.
No, he was invaluable as a pairing guy because he just solved so much. So, because I played a different version to his Vlad, but I think we had different matchups in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was going for Signar drops, which I never got all weekend because we never saw a Haley 3 player, which is exactly what I was kind of hunting for.
Yep.
Because he just blows away the clouds and then Victor Fire Templates just like eat his army away. But Chris's Vlad list, I think, was better into scenarios than mine was because he had the access to the Eliminators. Which is a tool, if I went back to that list, I'd probably switch out the Strike Tanker for.
Yeah.
Because I think they would keep me in a scenario position that was one of the... Which I had tooled that for that, but I don't think... I didn't have anything that was good enough. And I think they had a good piece to threaten scenarios.
Yeah, that's true. Like, to be honest, I put the Eliminators in after some experiences playing into Mercs. Specifically, like, Osram, but mostly Magnus too. Because I was like, I just need a piece to run into their zone from time to time. And also a couple of games against Trolls when I was just like, ugh, I just need something to unjam all these tough fuckwits. Get out of my house. Like, the one game I dropped all weekend, one of the reasons I reckon I dropped was my opponent scattered a cannon shot onto an Eliminator from a fucking smog belcher and then casually mauled the 10 to kill her, or whatever the number is. And I'm like, ugh, motherfucker. It was 1 to the 6 as well. God damn it. Well, 6-1, I should say.
Oh, wow.
Tankers
look super obnoxious, by the way.
Oh, they're good.
They're super good.
That's actually a thing, is, like, tankers, the Strike Tanker with Vlad 2, if you haven't played it, play it, because it's one of the best feat targets in the game. And it's just a lot of fun. That model, like, is one of the reasons I killed one of the Old Witch players. Although I never actually got to activate the tankers. My opponent was like... Yeah, you know, that was the last attack coming in, because I killed him with, actually, a suppression tanker punching Old Witch in the face. To be fair, that sounds bad, but then you are at power 15, and you're boosting both damage rolls with Vlad, it's not...
And it's speed 7, it's got half inch reach, which is not great.
But... Yeah, but when it gets to you, it gets to you. So, it was like, oh, you know... Like,
Matt 10.
The slug guns would go in at, like, dice off 5 and 2 dice. I'm like, no, they wouldn't. They would have gone in at dice off 4 and 3 dice because they have those random rules. A lot of people, if anyone is playing Kato out there, a lot of people don't realize what strike tankers actually do.
No, everyone knows what an oppression tanker does.
Oh, yeah.
And those things, like, just tankers in general are fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Like, the only reason you can play Armored Core in the meta right now is because suppression tankers exist.
Not just them, I think, but they are a very strong part, yeah.
It allows you to play into, like, fucking Satixis and other, like, Weapon Master single wound spams because they just put down covering fires and can actually, like, remove a shit ton of models every turn.
Well, the good thing is to me, and one of the reasons I really like them, is they're just super flexible. Like, they have 3 attack types, realistically. Like,
punch.
They can punch, they can shoot, and they can spray. And... No matter what your opponent's matchup is, one of them is going to be relevant. Like, even in the Old Witch... The second time I played Old Witch 3, I didn't kill her immediately, but she was playing Bump in the Night, and when she was Windblasting, I was putting down covering fires right in front of my shock troopers, or I was just shotgunning and getting value because that ignores the spray. And then when she stopped casting Windstorm, which she had to, because she was running out of just resources, doing stuff, oh boy, I've had good runs with suppression tankers, but we came up with a new name for it, which is the Depression Tanker, because that's what my opponent felt after 3 activations. I'm pretty sure I killed 15 models.
They can do that if you roll well enough.
Yeah, well, if you press 6 peasants, then 6 more dead models. As I said, I went 5-1. Myself and Batesy, we really hit off well, and our teammates, well, they carried us there with the final game and rotated how it went as well. So,
and that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's all that matters. So, yeah, I'm the world champ again, 2 times in a row. I've already been, well, my teammate Whaley has already been trying to convince me to go for win the WC for a 3rd time, and goddamn, he knows how to hit my buttons. Can't say I'll commit to that yet, but who the fuck
knows? There's people on this podcast that would like the second trophy
first. Oh, alright, just fucking play for Australia then next year. God, it's not that hard.
Well, spoilers.
Yeah, you've done it before.
Yeah, with a really bad list.
Yes. Yes. Next time we might have to, like, better... Well, to be fair, you left the country and then you made a bad list. This time around, you might come back to the country and then we'll force you to play a good list. And by we, I mean Jack.
I mean, let's talk about things you were impressed by when you, at the WPC. So for me, the most impressive thing I saw at the WPC was the amount of wins Star 3 got.
That caster.
So like when that caster first came out, I thought she was like super different compared to Boatscar. Yeah, she was very different from regular Quicks, where like your feet usually dictates half the game. And what she does is she kind of just does the same thing every turn, and then one of the turns she gets like a little more focus efficient. But the her kit is super impressive. Having a speed buff, a strength buff, and then like just naturally recurs, and then having like good output on a turn-to-turn basis is pretty different for a Quick character.
Well, this will probably get into the point I'll get into later regarding like what
when you
the WTC.
So I had the exact same opinion, Tom. I was actually going to say it, then you beat me to it. But when you look at Scar, all you think is you're like, that is a beehive.
Because
it just looks like a B-level spell list with B-level interactions. But then apparently when you put them all together, that beehive turns into like a solid A.
Yeah.
Because that model is like actually fantastic on the table and does something for Crix that Crix doesn't already do, which is huge because it just makes their pairings even more annoying to deal with. And going in, we did not prep as much for Scar 3 as we had a little bit of notice, because when we went to our own
WinterCon,
we saw a bunch of Scar 3 there, and we were like, okay, that was not someone who we were prepping for beforehand. And then going back, we did a little bit of prep, but I don't know if it was enough, because she actually does a lot, and she can take a lot of different lists. So we saw Scar 3 with Bane, Scar 3 with Satixis, and Scar 3 with Trolls.
Yes.
And they all play different.
So this is the part where, like, I was aware of what Scar 3 did, because I actually randomly played her. It was just like a joke. I, like, literally went, okay, I'm going to borrow one of my friend's Crooks lists, because you know, match up with Frawley, and we'd played the matchup before. We literally played it the day before, and I'm like, I can't be fucked to do this again. It was just some random tournament. Okay, Frawley. Frawley basically wrote out a Baldwin list real quick, and we proxied it, and then I basically borrowed one of my friend Drew's Scar 3 list, but point for point, and I played her. And what I was going to get into, Brian, before you rudely interrupt me...
Yeah, sorry, Klaus.
but in a relevant pattern, what I found real quickly was that she is incredibly flexible, and flexibility is, like, it's one of the things I think you really want in a WTC pairing, because a lot of the times you can't win on just raw numbers or raw skew, because people will think about that, even if they've never played it. A lot of people, if they're looking at your list, will try and figure out what you're up to and try and figure out ways to counter you, especially if you're on one of the bigger teams, quote-unquote, right? You're going to have your list dissected and analyzed. If your list is flexible, though, like Scar is, because Scar has a whole bunch of random shit she can do, especially in, like, Slaughter Fleet, to me, where she has access to guns, she has access to Tough, she has access to D-Cell, she has access to Golak Slaughterball, and he randomly just wins you games. She has access to a bunch of, like, a bunch of random ranged assassinations in Crix involving Slipstream, effectively, which is, you know, not something that is completely, you know, like, no one was expecting that. So I played it, and I actually managed to convince Whaley to give it a shot, and Whaley fell in love with Scar 3, because Whaley was originally going to play Scar 1, do his pairing he did for Iron Gauntlet, but I said, no, give Scar 3 a go, because I think she's really flexible and just in a good way. And he played his own list. He figured out a build that I really fucking like, which had, like, double min Blood Gorges, double max Marauders, one of which had Jessica on it, and it just really...
Overlords.
And yeah, Overlords, which were like the secret source. Side note, if you're playing Armored Core, be careful with your tankers, especially your strike tankers, because what tends to happen is that they get dominated by fucking Overlords, and they start shooting your own models in the back, because the tankers are usually slower than the Manowar they're in front. It's really irritating. When you kill your own fucking shock troopers with Overlords, you just feel super sad. Especially when they hit your feeded models, because your feeded models have boosted stats, but generally speaking, their defense is not quite
11 enough. In the back.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Like, Scar to me, I think, gives you, like, as Crix, a lot of random outs, and I think that's why she performs super well, is, like, she was that caster that's like a Vlad, like a Haley 3, like that. She can manufacture a lot of bullshit outs. Like, her cannons have Shadowfire in Crix.
So even if you play in the Banes theme, you can take Overlords in the list, and she can recur them. Because they're a living Crix model, so it's just like, what the fuck?
Furthermore, that Bane's theme actually just gives you 3 points per units, as I found out from Whaley. So it just gives you a different way of skewing Scar, which is just really quite nice. Yeah, I didn't... I played into it once, as I said, and that was the one game I lost. To be fair, I practiced into Scar a fair bit, so I was a bit unlucky in that game for a bunch of reasons I won't really get into. But yeah, the it gives you something good to pair with Nine Slayers. Brian, what did you find that was interesting then?
I was going to say...
Find something new then.
Oh, there was a lot of Vlad 2, and it wasn't surprising that there was a lot of Vlad 2, but what was surprising was just the amount of different... He was not just an armor core.
Mm.
He was... I played against him in Winter Guard, and that even that you'd be like, that doesn't seem like you're monopolizing on Vlad 2 very well when you're doing that, but you're wrong.
Monopolizing.
Capitalizing. You're not capitalizing on Vlad 2 properly with that. That's not quite true because he still turns on rockets like a beast.
Mm-hmm.
So and his feet still does things. I don't know if it capitalizes on his feet nearly as well as like armor core because I don't think because you're not getting extra damage out of the guns.
Yep.
You're getting just extra accuracy, but on an assassination that can be more than enough.
Yep.
But yeah, it's not surprising that Vlad 2 is, but it was interesting to see the amount of different builds that there were for that caster, considering that Kator was very low in terms of numbers at the event this year.
Well, surprisingly so to me, and I think I think that Vlad 2 is just in a really good spot in the meta. To be honest, right, I think any caster with an anti-cloud wall solution baked in is just in a good spot, period.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the big lists, like Cold Grimmer and Trolls, Haley 3 and Sigma, now Gorshade 4 and Red, they just randomly have clouds.
And it's very strong.
And the thing is, right, a lot of those casters are good even if their clouds are useless, and that's, to me, the mark of, well, honestly, a good caster in this meta. So, in addition to that, having a good way of countering clouds without having to play into it is also just really important to me.
So, next month we'll see another Cloud Wall caster.
Yeah, well, I said Gorshade 4.
No, he's already out.
Oh, who's the other one? Lucas. Ah, it's Lucas! Yes. Oh, man. I'm not going to try and say how his juicer rule works, because after 3 casts, I apparently still don't know how it works. Take drugs, get clouds. There we go. Now, let's see. Go on,
another thing I was disappointed... Oh, I guess not disappointed. Not, I was surprised at how, ineffective the slurs was. I felt like a lot of people were prepared for it. Like, what do you guys thought?
I agree, except when the Slayers were playing for scenario and table abuse. Then I think they were in their element. But a lot of people tried, to my knowledge, running Slayers as just the numbers skew. And as I said, I don't think that works in the WTC. The final game against Whaley, Whaley played against Tomaj against Poland. Whaley got a bit unlucky because he missed a couple of combo strikes to, kill a World Guardian, and that fucking snowballed against Bradigus. But to me, what was really interesting was I looked at the positioning at one point, and okay, so you get a bit lucky against World Slayers, cool. What Tomaj had done then was he positioned all of his models to be out of threat range of Asphyxius's feet using Mystic Wards and positioning and noting down where all the Arc Nodes are and where they could possibly go to, and then putting some Terrupt Terrain in spots to stop the one that could run in. And that kind of positioning doesn't come unless you've had a lot of practice into Slayers, but because everyone's fucking playing Slayers, that's, well-rewarded practice, so to speak. There's a lot of lists that are just not worth practicing into. Believe it or not, practicing into fucking Stalingrad is not really worth it because no one's actually running that shit.
There was one?
Yeah, that was me. And congratulations. I had a lot of people who were dropping the wrong lists into it as well. But that's the thing, are you really going to practice for that one guy in that one team who might have it, right? And even in, another big tournament, that's not necessarily the case. But
that's also why we did not, me personally, get a lot of practice into a lot of the different Crix matchups because there were so many of them.
Yeah.
It was really hard to sit down and learn just one matchup, but I can definitely understand why Slayers would be the one someone would choose.
Yeah.
Because it's meta-defining at the moment.
Yes.
But because it's become so meta-defining, the meta is catching up.
Correct.
And that's what we're seeing at the event.
Yeah.
is that people are prepared.
Yeah, and it's like, people were prepared for the big lists in general. Like, last year we tried preparing for Ghost Fleet in various capacities.
I'm sure lots of people were prepping for Dreamer this year.
Yeah, correct. Especially most of the European meta, where Dreamer is just apparently a monster running rampant. A Haley 3 as well, like most Haley 3 builds were kind of mapped out. A couple of people tried some jank involving blockhouses and the like, and that's probably still fine, but in general, like...
There was one, what is the lightning theme called?
The Tesla team? Yeah. Oh yeah. Hey Tom, did the Tesla team come best American team, or no?
They came second. They're second. They were above us.
Ah, well, Rip. Your bed is off.
Yeah.
Oh, Rip and Peppers. Yeah, what else? Let's see.
Foster performed exactly how we expected.
how can I forget? I was really impressed by it, how, like, despite all this crap involving, like, Armored Core and Manoth getting Adjudicator to CID and all that stuff, Ostrom just reminded everyone that he is the best. And I think one of the reasons... Well, obviously, like, part of the reason our team got carried was my captain, fucking Batesy, just smashed everyone with Ostrom. Alright, but a lot of that came down to me, and one of the things I think makes for a good WTC list is you want something flexible... Cool. You also want something that is actually capable of playing the table. To me, this comes down to two aspects. One is, you kind of want a list that is okay going second, because in a lot of cases, if you can go second comfortably, or even semi-comfortably into any of the lists like Ostrom that massively abuse going first, you're in a decent spot. That's one of the things I quite like about Armored Core, and it's the reason why both myself and Brian put Chariots in our list, is that they give you great outs if your opponent goes first and starts trying to blitz you on scenario, because it restricts where your opponent can put all their models.
Because both models, even like both Chariots, do things that make coming forward really dangerous. So if you're playing into heavies, you have to be very careful where you position those heavies against a Siege Chariot, because that thing will just knock models into each other, fucking up your entire like positioning.
Yep.
And then the Assault Chariot, which is the one I was running, is very good if they're playing things not like Satixus because they're immune to blast damage, but other like really fast multi like single wound infantry models that are vulnerable to blast, or even if they're not that vulnerable, because the thing is base power 10 blast damage,
yeah.
It tends to be very effective at removing those type of models, and you have to be very careful where you put them. The other problem is, because they can do it after they charge, they have to not be able to put models within 10.5 inches of the chariots at all times,
yes.
Because that gives them a huge threat extension into the rest of your army.
Correct. In addition, like, the Assault Chariot, I found, like, if it just scatters, it restricts where all the solos can go,
because yeah.
You don't want to randomly...
Well, again, one of my games, I felt I was slightly advantaged in the game already, but because my Assault Chariot was... Well, he did not prepare properly for it, because I don't think he knew what the rules were.
Mm-hmm.
It did super well in my game, because my drifts were very good, and my blast damages was on point. Like, I was rolling very well on blast, and my drifts were going to hit multiple models rather than the one or two would have hit if they hit directly.
Mm.
So because those did that, I got lucky and I was able to do like way more work with that model than it probably should have normally.
Mm.
But that is what you do when you take blast. Sometimes you get incredibly lucky and sometimes they drift off and do nothing.
Yeah. But the thing is, right, is you put that option on the table to just have a nice
scatter. And when you get 2 to 4 shots, you tend to get lucky at some point.
Yeah, correct. You can just take the models at random. You can take the shots at random models that are a little outside of range, and like half the time you'll hit them because they'll scatter forward, or you hit other models, and that's pretty good. I find in general these days, if you have lists that also can see through or interact with forests in general, that's also quite strong.
A Rusk 2.
A Rusk 2, and also I'd say Circle.
Yep.
So it was funny.
Barn will be very disgusting in the coming.
So I actually, the day after WTC, I was with Tamaj and Charles Song and a couple of other guys, Tamaj being the Circle player on the Polish South team. And it was funny because a bunch of the grids would change according to basically how the table layout would go. And with Circle, that makes a lot of sense. Also equally funny was Tamaj then complaining that Vithan CID would bring a whole bunch of derpy Circle players in. More importantly, it just made people actually want to tech for Circle, which I found hilarious. Quite appropriate.
It brings me back in.
Correct. Now I have to take the fucking minus 10 range to shoot.
We have to prepare for the derpy turkey.
Yeah, derpy turkey. Love it. Gobble gobble.
Zap zap.
Zap zap. Boom boom. Yeah.
Speaking of CID, by the way, WTC, great event. If you have the opportunity, do go. Even if you don't play, it's a great environment to just hang out and then talk with people from different countries that plays the game.
Yeah, it's an excellent event. I definitely recommend going if you can.
Yeah. If you're from Europe, I'd give it a shot. If you're from, not in Europe, then obviously it'd be harder, but it's still bloody worth. I would tend to see if I could, honestly, if you could get signed off on one of the random teams, because a lot of teams will have, problems actually filling all the slots, especially if they get, a third team randomly. So even just playing on some random team with some people you haven't met is just really valued, because, Dylan, for instance, was someone who actually skilled up, in part because he went to the WTC and played for,
United
Nations, and then some other random teams, and then eventually played for the Australian squad.
In 2016.
That is a WTC champion, Dylan.
That is correct. Not quite as good as two-time WTC champion Christopher Davies.
Wow.
Oh my god.
Hey, I got a
two-time... We have our very own derpy turkey here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the derpiest of it.
Hey, I'm an expert in pushing models forward and rolling dice. Sometimes I roll two dice, and sometimes I have to remember to take a dice away.
Anyways, speaking of Dylan, there's a REST CID that dropped yesterday.
Yes.
By the time this podcast drops, who knows what day it is, but it dropped recently.
Yep.
It dropped like it does every year, the morning of Moab.
Yep. So we have a tournament called Moab, which is Mother of All Battles, and it is always right after the WTC. So sometimes a bunch of people can't make it because they're either jet-lagged or, they're still in Europe, or they're working or whatever. Now, last year, we were waiting with fucking bated breath for the Merc update, and that came on the morning of Moab after no warning. Because we're like, oh, it's going to be next week or some shit. This year, again with no warning, we have the red update.
Tomo was quite happy.
Yeah, which is good, because last year Tomo ran the event and was quite unhappy, because he had to now suddenly accommodate for a bunch of theme forces he didn't understand how they'd changed. But yeah, you're at CID. First of all, I'd like to welcome our new Elvish Overlords. I'd also like people to quietly forget that an Elf player was on the winning WTC team. Don't pay any attention to that. Elves needed this. Retribution are, in fact, a bad faction, and now they've been fixed, I'm sure. Although, getting back into that, the reason one of the things Jeff was, of course, the Ret player in this particular instance. What he did was he basically played Kalissa. I believe he played Kalissa all six games, in part because we never got a matchup for it.
There was a Ret player on both Australian WTC winning teams.
Yeah, there was. Dylan was there last. And they both had Kalissa. But one of the reasons Kalissa is good in a WTC event is, as we talked about...
Flexibility
and abilities to ignore random bullshit terrain on the table, because someone didn't set up the terrain table properly, maybe deliberately so, and you're there to exploit it. Nothing quite like having Fort Kalissa, a house in the middle of the zone behind, where you can just sit there and shoot with Phantom Hunter all day, all night. Pretty good.
Yeah, the terrain's pretty good at WTC, is pretty good for that.
Yes. Anyway, getting back into Ret.
That was Ret.
Okay, well, getting back into the Ret.
Well, no, then. We're going to start with Krix, because that's the first thing on the list. Severa Blacktide, they changed Vortex Blast, so it removes from play.
Yeah.
The whole, if you get boxed by Vortex Blast, you get removed from play.
Yeah.
Now to Retribution, because the rest is Ret.
Well, actually, there should be a Signar section in there involving the latest Signar nerfs, but I guess PP just forgotten about that. Shame on you, PP.
It'll come next weekend.
It'll probably come next weekend. It should come next weekend.
So first on the list is the Warcaster. Gurshield 4.
Yeah. No.
Forgiven.
By the way, before this CID, very bad.
No longer
very,
is he
very bad.
No longer is he Borshade. No longer is he actually legitimately a beehive. Now he still does his vortex thing, but he now has a real feat and he has some real spells.
So his new feat is like a kind of alteration of Borka 2's feat.
Yeah.
So
it's Boca 2's feet plus Constant Blazer's feet, and it's actually probably better than both, weirdly.
Well, his is on destroyed, while Boca's is on hit.
Yeah. Borka's also has a stealth aspect, but Borka has a command of 10, and yes, it can go to 12 with the Rune Bearer, but still not the best. And it's better than Constance's because Gorshade has a real spell list as opposed to a fake one.
Dauntless Resolve, Freezing Mist, Hand of Ice, and Light of Wrath.
Yeah, so basically what Gorshade gets is he gets an armor buff plus tough and retribution...
For infantry.
For infantry, and retribution apparently just really love tough because for once they don't take their models immediately off the table. He gets a Cloud Wall, and he gets two debuff spells, which are both actually quite exceptional.
An arm debuff and a defense debuff.
Yep.
And remove stealth.
He also still can revive. Whether you want to do that or not is up to you. And again, like his armor buff works on his armor debuff basically works on everything that is enemy to cold, so that's just quite nice to have. He's a very flexible caster. I will be curious to see where he goes because I don't. Apart from the Dawn Guard plus Sentinels brick, which is probably the first list that everyone will play, I'm not sure what you want to do with this guy because he can play basically anything. Like, Mage Hunters love armor debuffs, because the list kind of, apart from the fact it now has, like, access to C-Rat.
And Combo Strike!
And Combo Strike.
Yeah, that list got a little bit of,
It got some tender loving, I'll say as much. But yeah, like, he always appreciates armor debuffs.
What happened to Abraticus' list on the weekend, Chris? I believe it got tabled by Assyria Shadows Army?
The Retribution, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like...
That seems wrong.
It does. Next year we'll be saying a Boulder 2 list did, and you know what? That'd actually be fine, because Mage Hunters are blessed. But yeah, curious caster. I do think he probably will end up...
He's good, but we don't know where he'll land yet, because he's flexible enough to land anywhere.
Because I remember talking to Affy, and Affy was basically said that he's an angry elf, and he has a lot of time on his... He doesn't have a lot of time on his hands. He wants to cast basically every spell on his list.
He might end up being the Vlad, too, of the faction.
He might be, yeah. Either way, I'd be curious to see where he goes.
I'm quite happy with how the next one turned out, Raven.
Yeah.
I always kind of liked Raven, just as a model, and like as in the rules.
What a weeb.
Yeah. And, well... Do you know what my paint scheme for her is, Tom?
What?
It's, I think, like, lightning from one of the games I've chosen as a color palette for her.
Anyways, move on.
I see we have a weeb-like fucking... Oh, God, I don't know how you describe it.
Anyway.
This is a weeb-free podcast.
No, yeah. It's not. This is a weeb-3 podcast.
That was bad, but I will accept it.
So Raven, she went to 28 points. I don't know if that's up or down, honestly. She gained Sprint. That's pretty nice. She gained Weapon Master because they lost Eliminator and Vortex of Destruction. So they added ways, so they changed the way she moves and how she gets a damage buff. So they just made it straight rather than having to cast weird spells.
Yeah.
Then she gained Countermeasure and Open Fire in return, and both those spells are fucking fantastic, and give her a lot more flexibility as a caster.
Countermeasure's a weird one. I think it's really good on Mage Hunter Infiltrators now. Open Fire is exceptional on a Hyperion, especially with the Hyperion with Snipe and access to her feet, because she can feet first, and then take the shot with Open Fire, and it's boosted, so you're more likely to get the crit suction, like, you know, 16-inch pie plate of doom. And then you can activate your Hyperion, walk up, and do it again.
And is your feet boosted or additional?
I believe it's boosted.
Okay.
Boosted.
Okay.
Yeah. So, by the way, and this is probably not super relevant to the CID yet, but if a Dawnguard Trident actually comes out in the way as it was, Raven plus a Trident is pretty hilarious, because... Effectively, every time that model kills something under Raven's feet, it gets to Swift Hunter, and it can make a shit ton of gunshots.
All boosted attack rolls. Yeah, I'm excited. I've always liked her as a caster. She was just a very two-dimensional caster at the beginning of the edition.
Yeah.
And well, now she's...
She paid the price for being the Snipe Feet Go caster, and now she's Snipe Open Fire... No, Snipe Feet Open Fire.
Now she has options.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, we'll see where she ends up landing overall, but I think in general it made her more three-dimensional.
I do agree.
Next is the demon. It went to 14 cost. I think that's down.
It's down.
And they did the same change to its gun as it happened to the Crix model. which essentially is it's gun removed from play now, which is good because Rhett gets some RFP.
They probably didn't need it, but yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, it makes sense when it's like it opens a black hole and it eats you.
Yeah. Next is Disco. Disco, I believe the big change here is actually not listed here. It's the fact that it now works in Forges of War in general. But that will probably come later. Basically, Disco's bond has been changed, specifically from No Crippled Systems under Run to when he does his imprint, Run also gets the imprint. I think this is intended in part to make Run a more appealing caster outside of Forges of War, and in general, if you're playing in Forges, it makes up for the fact that Battle Mages have, by and large, lost Force Barrier.
Doesn't he already have some version of Force Barrier, though?
Doesn't. Well, he has it personally, but this one is the blast damage within 3 inches.
And plus 4 armor, or plus 2 armor?
Plus 2 armor, yeah.
So he gets plus 2 armor against ranged attacks, which is pretty good. Because he's already immune to blast damage, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and he gets like plus 2 defense as well. I think he just natively has Force Barrier. And his brain damage got changed to Deafen, which is just swapping annoying rules. Truth be told, if you landed brain damage on your opponent's caster, in a lot of cases you kind of won the game. And I remember a large part of early Mark 3 was brain damaging casters like Wormwood or...
we played that game. It was super weird because it was like, well, back then there was no theme, so there people were like taking
Disco everywhere.
People attempted to take Disco on Alara because she had the range. She has a refuge spell.
Yep.
But then Disco does not benefit from Phantom Seeker, which then doesn't like let you spray through Wormless Force.
Yep. So it was a big thing. We were surprised a bunch of people were running Alara with Disco.
Yeah, but I was super happy. I was like, oh yeah, this is my matchup.
This is way better than when Dylan was playing it, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of changes to Disco. I think that most of the changes are not actually on this little list here, but yeah, we'll get into them later. I mean, another one would be Alara works now in Forges. Anyway, Gorgon is now a spray bot.
That's really good change, because the spray still does its minus 2 speed, which means it has a bit of control.
The funny thing I reckon here is, speaking of Alara, Alara is now more lists, and therefore Alara fucking loves this change. Because
she was already in Forges.
No, she wasn't. She was only the mage hunter thing.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
And as a result of that, like, this is a non-disco alternative to, like, benefit from the same things. Because if you can have the Gorgon spray, drop your speed, and then it fucks off with, like, what was it, Speed of Death, I think is what it's called.
Yeah. She has to no, it doesn't have to kill anything, does it?
No, it just has
it's
to
not sprint. Yeah, just...
It's refuge.
Except it's on Battle Group, which is better.
Yeah, a lot better.
It's also cute on Harpies, because they just, like, fly in front of a forest. Fly back.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Harpies also are very focus inefficient, and would fucking love just being pumped with 3 focus every turn. We have the Hyperion, which basically got to the cheapest Colossal at present at 32. I think it's cheaper than a Helios. I'm pretty sure it is, at least.
And I think it's tied with the Blightbringer.
Blightbringer is 32. Yeah, you're right. It's the same as a Blightbringer, and it's 12 range 12 on its Starburst gun.
Woo!
This is an important thing. So one of the key measurements, I think, in War Machine is if you can shoot at 12 inches versus 10, and the reason is actually rather simple. Most
zones
are 12 inches.
Which means if you're in the zone, you can shoot somebody else in the zone.
Correct.
Without moving.
Yep. In addition, most threat ranges in melee are about 11 inches on most casters. 10 to 11 is the norm, so if you shoot them with a range 10 gun, you're frequently in range to get charged in retaliation, which is really terrible for a Colossal, because if a Colossal is getting attacked in melee, almost inevitably the model attack in melee will trade up into it or be another Colossal. The Starburst being a range 12, it's back to being terrifying. Hypnos just got a points debuff, whatever. Hypnos doing Hypnos things.
Imperatus also got a hit, a points debuff, so it's now 20, and it got to mat 8, so it's lovely and scary now.
Yep. Morris is now faster, has parry, and has 1-inch blades.
Who cares?
No, that is very important.
Oh, is it?
Okay.
Yeah.
How so?
I have to keep going. It has to do with the themes changes.
Fair, fair. Phoenix is also cheaper and is now mat 7.
Apparently that's a big change. Tomo played it on the weekend, said that it did a lot more, felt more impactful.
Yeah, I actually couldn't get behind it. It basically means, like, the Phoenix is your premium heavy, and now it doesn't have, like, this fucking paperweight syndrome that you have on certain other kind of premium heavies, like the Spriggan. I'm not going to say in this case the Spriggan is a bad heavy because it's significantly being buffed, but... So the Spriggan basically is also 17 points, and it went the opposite direction. It became more flexible, whereas the Phoenix became more of a heavy beater. Spriggan is only mat 6, power 18, whereas the Phoenix is mat 7, power effectively 19 with an Arcanist. This one, I think, is one of those where it just helps with, like, certain casters who want an Arcanode by accident. Like, they want a primary Arcanode, maybe a Chimera, and they want a secondary Arcanode just for kicks. Ron can sometimes be this guy. He can sometimes take a triple Arcanode battle group, like Chimera, Chimera, Phoenix. And in this case, your Phoenix is a much better anchor now. And also cheaper. Alright, next up is the Dawn Guard, and specifically the Destas. The Destas basically glossed all of their random shit to gain Dual Attack, which is just way easier. Dual Attack in particular just means that you don't have to have a fucking flowchart on how to activate the Destas and random weird stuff where basically if they kill with the impact attack, they no longer can make attacks and other stupid shit like that. Or the fact that if they were quick working, they had to be disengaged. This is just a much cleaner change. The gun got more stronger, and the gun also gets close volley, which basically means, is a new rule, if you hit a model with its with the lance, you can shoot it and automatically hit it. Now, from experience back in the day, Destas under Ossian were actually quite respectable, because they got to double tap, they got quicken, which was a good bonus for its melee output, and they also got access to, well, the feet. So when you feet and you shot, you effectively got two lance strikes at once, which is a good way of having cavalry work.
And now it's still, now it can do that again.
Yeah, but a lot more flexibly and with high power. Destas, so dual attack on cavalry models is kind of a scary thing when you think about it, because you can get into some very weird spots with cavalry, and you can shoot their backline and do some other wacky stuff. Like, if I'm not mistaken, like, you can just have Raven's feet and you can charge some of these Dawn Guard in and just fucking shoot the caster to death with some boosted power 14s. And yeah, you know, like, it might not kill a lot of casters, frankly. There's a lot of casters in the game who won't care, but it's still a thing you can tell your opponent to keep in mind. In addition, it just means that you can, even if you can't gun the caster down, you can gun down all their support and feel good about it. Assyria likes new Destas.
Assyria likes every change on this list.
True. I'll put it this way. I had to convince my...
Because you know what Assyria does? She polishes turds.
Yeah.
And that's all. Like, if the turds get shinier, then she just makes them shinier on top
Even
of it.
Even more shiny.
That's right.
Yeah. Well,
we're going to be blinded by all the shiny turds.
Ooh, yeah. My teammate who was playing Rhett did want to take a serial list with Destas in it as something as a flex. I eventually convinced him no, and then after the new Destas came... One part of the reason why was testing with the new Destas was very exceptional. So yeah, look forward to seeing those. If you've gotten a box on the cheap like a lot of people have, then congratulations, your fucking investment's finally paid off.
Woohoo!
Right. I mean, I know people who have, like, 2 units of Desert just sitting around for us since Mark II.
Yep.
Invictors got cheaper and gained Repo 3 on the UA.
Yep.
They're still pretty bad, I think.
I actually don't disagree. I think they're fine.
I miss Flank.
Yeah, they're, like, dedicated shooting, but Repo 3 is quite good. I played against someone running, like, quadruple Dawn Guard in the WTC, and I gotta say, I was pretty impressed with the Invictors. They're just solid dudes with
guns. Yeah, they're not bad if you know how to monopolize them. Capitalize them. Capitalize them.
God damn it.
Ryan, we need to start a Monopoly podcast.
Yeah.
We are not starting a fucking Monopoly podcast.
It'll be trash.
It would be the worst.
It's not about the train station.
It'll just be Chris talking about Netrunner again.
Yep.
No.
And we don't want that, do we?
Anyway. No. Next is Battle Mages. Ooh, Battle Mages.
Yes,
Battle Mages. So these are the ones that probably change the most in terms of, like, actual how they play.
Yeah, so Battle Mages are more of a line unit now than they were before. So, effectively, they went through the most changes, but the big kicker was that they got set defense instead of force barrier. So now they're no longer immune to blast, which is kind of shit.
But they're def 15 against charges.
Which is alright, but the thing is that really kicker is that they are much cheaper at 8 points.
8 points for six dudes is pretty good.
Yeah, and they got range one.
They're not bad models, even with the loss of force barrier.
Well, yeah, the idea, I think, is that if you're taking a couple of battle mages, then that's fine, because you can get the artificer usually as a free card, and you can put force barrier back on them, so you're functionally unchanged. But if you want to spam battle mages with some synergy, you can also do that. For instance, you can have battle mages be the line unit if you're playing, say, Varos in Forges, so that you can trigger his feet moves if you want to, but you also have now, you know, infantry models. Also, battle mages still are, how should I put it, they're max six dudes with 1-inch reach,
and
they have
two
attacks and beat back. Like, they are...
They're power 11, too, I think.
They're surprisingly good in melee, put it that way, for wizards.
They've always been, yeah.
Yeah.
They're fucking, like, monks.
In addition, like, one of the changes, which is goes to later, it relates to the Magister.
They're FA4 too, right?
Yeah, you can... They didn't go quite crazy with FAU, but Dylan can play at least part of his, like, charge of the Battle Mages again, and then he could probably sell off the rest to someone else who wants to play that.
Oh, and they gained Rage 1 on their melee weapon.
Yeah, that's what I was going into. That's okay. One of the reasons why that's relevant is actually because of the Magister, who we'll get into later. Infiltrators gain combo strike, and they also gain, I believe they're more expensive, but they also can ambush. Seems fine. Mage Hunter Strike Force, oh god.
So they ambush with the theme, that's the benefit the theme gets, and as long as they don't take Iris, then you get the theme benefit, which is kind of funny.
Thank fuck for that, by the way. There's a very good reason why.
Because the Iris 3 art that came out when she was released is her standing behind Syntharion to shoot him in the back, which is kind of exactly what an ambush model would be doing.
Yeah, well, how should I put it? She just...
Balance is a thing in the game, I understand.
It is, sadly, but, you know...
I still think it's funny.
Some of us wanted to have Iris basically do the finishing blow after a bunch of Mage Hunter infiltrators, like, combo struck a fucking, I don't know, an assimilator or whatever was in that artwork, and then quick work and shoot Syntharion in the back. But we can't. What we can do instead is play Mage Hunters and just put a Power 20 C-Rat in that fuckwit and call it a day. Well, Power 21, I should say, if you get the entire unit.
By the way, that is a very, very, very good change. I don't feel like people understand how important that is. Now that unit can actually crack armor.
I don't think people do either. Like, that is...
Especially on Jax, now that you can do CRAs, they get way more effective.
Yeah, like, doing two-man CRAs, in general, improves the maths on that unit shooting by a pretty significant amount. And the fact they have magic weapons in an era where Menoth is just, like, going, hey, how do you do, is, you know, it's super sweet.
So that's on the UA, while CRA is just on the unit.
Yeah, they just can take it. I mean, to be fair, I think you're probably taking the UA with this unit anyway.
Oh, I agree. I'm just saying that if you lose the ammo.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, well, it's information.
But you can, for instance, still take, like, Iris 3 on this unit. I mean, it's now harder to do so because a lot of the stuff is tied to the UA, but you can still see right even if you have Iris 3 on that unit and you want access to that Repo 3.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Stormfall Archers are now House Guard, which is means that they can be Desperate Paced and some other random stuff. This is an important benefit we'll come to later, again, tied to the theme benefit. Dawnguard Desta Thane. This guy. So
he got all the same changes as his friends, except his gun is D3 shots rather than a single shot.
Yeah. I personally speaking am not 100% sure with... one thing with close volley is that it affects all of his attacks, so if he rolls three shots,
He's doing one boosted power 14 and three unboosted power 14s.
Or three boosted power 14s if you're playing...
Which is pretty gross.
It's pretty good. There's not much to say about this guy. He still has unyielding, which I think is a whatever rule, but it's definitely better now that the unyielding change has gone through and just affects melee attacks and not, you know, models in melee range like the fucking Desters used to have. The Artificer, here we go. So the Artificer is probably one of the solos I think he's changed the most because he's in more themes, and he also has a... how do we put it? He now is basically the guy who gives your models force barrier, and the important thing is he's now acts in Dawnguard as well. Plus, I believe he still kept force barrier himself.
Yes, he's the only battle mage who kept it, except for maybe Ron as well.
Yeah. Let's see. His drive and a warjack in this model activates remove D3 bondance from his... this drive isn't that relevant.
He increased to magic ability 7, so he's more accurate with his nuke.
Yep. There we go.
And he got set defense like everybody else.
Yes.
And his gauntlets also went up to range one.
Yeah. The extra magic is probably good because it can mango blast stuff and you'd be pretty happy with it. But yeah, he's now a pretty good... He's now a support model and he can still fight, which is nice. Then now we come to the Magister. Unfortunately, he lost Force Barrier, but fortunately he gets Veteran Leader Shaiul Troopers. Sorry, Ron, you don't get access to Magic 9. Thank fuck for that. But he is a way of making sure that all of your battle mages, even if you're playing a caster that isn't Ron, still get access to Magic 7. Because Magic 6 is kind of not cutting it. There's not as many ways to buff magical rat and mat and rat stats. Not, you can't aim with the magical people, for instance. But this High Shaiul Magister still has access to the combo smite attack, which he can do now at 1-inch range. And his ability now to give plus one to attack rolls to, like, your battle mages randomly is really actually quite good. It makes, as I said, it's probably a bit not super relevant for Ron, weirdly, because Ron's still probably going to be feeding and using them. But after feat turn, like, it still means your battle mages are a lot more effective in general.
Well, they're mat 7 and magic ability 7, which means that their guns are better and they're punching in melee more effectively.
Correct. Again, this means that casters who don't normally want to play nice with battle mages, that don't really care as much...
Now have a reason.
Yeah, and you can obviously combo this with, like, say, Gorshe to get them up even higher, to get them, like, to power 19 or mat... Sorry, power 12 or so, mat 9. With his debuffs, same with Assyria. Assyria was weirdly one of those who did also like battle mages, so this is another way of getting him in.
Remember when I played it against you at the IG finals, that you?
Did you have battle mages in that list? I'm pretty sure it was just fucking mage hunters.
Oh, never mind, that was against Jake.
Yeah.
I did have them with Assyria. It was actually a lot of fun.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, you played Raven into Chris, didn't you?
No, he played Assyria. He just played Assyria. He just... got double strike force and Hyperion and some other shit from what I remember.
Oh no, I had Chris. I had Disco and the Ben and I think Banshee and Paradis there because we're playing like 75 points to our two.
Yeah, you definitely had a Hyperion though. I remember that because I had the fucking.
Because it consumed your Alexia one.
Yeah, cripple consumed Alexia and then I fucking air swung on that thing with Behemoth at mat 6. God damn it!
I missed 3 times.
Yeah, it was something like that. I managed to effectively not fucking lose because of Widowmakers. God bless Widowmakers.
Oh, I miss Widowmakers.
Yeah, I wish Widowmakers were back in the game. Alright, so rounding it off, and apologize to people who don't want... did maybe wanted some more unique content, but to be perfectly honest, this is a... like, these changes have just gone live, and... I'll be frank, a lot of these changes are actually quite wide-impacting, like, more so, and I'd be curious to see what the rep community makes of this, or complaints about. Probably both.
God, I just got into Crucible Guard, and I'm, like, already going, like, oh! But that's only because before I got into Crucible Guard, this is where I was thinking I was going next.
Fair, fair. Alright.
It's okay. When I'm eventually allowed back in the country, I'll donate my rent to the Frawley staff.
What did you say?
I'll donate my rent to the Frawley staff when I'm allowed back.
Fair enough.
All right. So the library continues to grow.
Yeah. Oh, as always.
Yep. Anyway, now we get to the Fiend Forces, and a couple of changes we've alluded to, this is where it comes in. So the big one is Defenders of Ios, cut Stormfall Archers, because they're now House Guard models. All Retribution solos, and the big one is, first of all, Electromancers gain Repo 3, in addition to the Stormfalls, which always had it, and the Retribution Solos, and that was a big part of it. Electromancers are weirdly one of those units where sometimes they're fucking exceptional, like into the Trencher matchup, and sometimes they just do basically nothing. But Repo 3 is just really nice on them, quite flexible. I know that, like, when my friend Jeff was playing them, it was a bit hit or miss whether they did anything, but... the games where you do stuff like you charge in the Pain Knight and then repo him back and then shoot him in the back, repo him a bit out of melee range but in electro leap range of everything, and then you shoot that guy with all the Electromancers. Like, that was a tactic we did way back in the day, and it still fucking works because each of those Electromancers has Lightning Generator, which is just fucking mint. Also shooting Warjacks and just putting the one less focus there, that actually gets around a lot of weird effects, and like some Warjacks being immune to disruption or being able to shake it. It's quite nice. Retribution, and then this benefit, which I think is maybe a bit too much. Every house guard, for every house guard unit in the army, one retribution unit in this army gains advanced move. Now, the reason this is a bit much is because you can advance move house guard rifleman, and you can go back to shooting top of one the deployment with house guard rifleman under Raven, because they can walk, and then they can walk again with desperate pace, and then you can give them snipe, and they're range 18. You shoot about 1 or so inches in the deployment line. You can do similar-ish things. Sorry?
I believe Pagan is dead on the red Facebook head that was like a typo, but not 100% sure.
Oh, what, sorry?
I believe the intended change was a retribution unit without gun.
Yeah, they're changing it to without ranged weapons.
Well, then strike my thoughts. Yeah, that's sort of what I thought, right?
Is
you can
they want people to play more Halberdiers first.
Well, actually, this change to me is really important because it helps you advance move Risavus. And as I said, and one of the problems we had going in was if you went second against Krix and you had Risavus, because Risavus only speed 5, they're a really good unit in general, but you couldn't compete in scenario, you couldn't get them into the zones really quickly. And as I said, Jeff won 2 of his games against Krix and went 2nd in 2 of the other games, and guess what happened there? I think this is a pretty important change for that. I mean, obviously, I don't personally like halberds, but if you want to do halberds, go for it. This also applies to Risavus, the house, what's his face, swordsman? Elowir, I think it is.
Nobody's ever seen those on the table.
Yeah, I mean, they might, because they, it turns out, are really good into Satixis, I guess, but in general, they're not exactly the most popular. Anyway, they've decided, I guess in general, this kind of possibly gets you away from halberds, but we'll see how effective that actually is. Anyway, yeah, Defenders was always their best theme, and it's gotten a little bit of tweaks.
Refugees
of Ios has always been their best theme, and it's gotten some tweaks to help it out. It's still... The one change that hasn't really been mentioned is the fact that Trident is now basically in every fucking theme, and Defenders is one of them. So we'll see how that goes. But you know what? I'm not going to talk about the Trident anymore. Just assume it's in every theme, and it will change the meta in big ways, and blah, blah, blah.
Next is the Forges of War changes, which is they've added Disco, Solos with Battle Group Controller, Fey Knight Guardian, and the Dawnguard Trident Battle Engine.
Fucking Trident, stop getting in my face.
The second benefit is also changed. For every 30 points of Shaiel models and units in the army, you can gain one Retribution Solo or Hearthguard Shaiel Arcanist unit for free. They do not count towards bonus points.
Yeah, so the Arcanists, for anyone who doesn't know them, are the 3 guys for 3 power boosters. They cost 7 or so points, and they're probably not getting played otherwise.
Yeah, but for free, you get 3 power boosts for, cost.
That's pretty good. Yeah, well, it turns out a lot of things become free. I'm just thankful they're not battle mages that are free, which
is
good.
Yes, free 8 points that do that much work. 8 points is already under-costed. Free is not okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
Free is not okay.
Some things are okay at being free, and battle mages are not one of them.
How shall you, Arcanists? Sure, they can be free.
Yes. This kind of makes the Forges of War... So, obviously, it's Shaiel models, which means that stuff like... there are any Shaiel battle engines out there, please put your hands up. Oh, there are none. Okay, never mind.
Put your hands up.
But on the other hand, all the battle mages count. As I said, battle group solos with battle group controller does include Alara.
And possibly a future Retribution Zero model.
Yeah, who the fuck knows who that's going to be.
Asuria Zero.
It's probably Ron.
Nah, it should be Raven to give snipe.
It could be Raven, but it's probably Virus, Ron, or Raven, or Kalissa,
or Gareth.
Oh, that might be cool. Super solo.
That would be fun.
Then him and Alara could do something.
Is kind of trying to pretend to be
super
solo.
That's true. Yeah. So maybe they'll do something else.
Yeah. Regardless, Forges is now a lot more flexible.
Virus with hair.
Virus in his punk rocker days. no. I don't think Gareth's ever had hair, but yeah, we'll see how we go. Virus, yeah, true. Anyway, Forges in general has gotten a lot more flexible. You can take battle. You now not really penalized for taking battle mages. It's got that same points breakdown that lists like Prime Materia do, where it's take 90 points and then, or Black Industries, I should say, and then get some pretty overweighted free cards. As I said, overweighted in this case because your Arcanists at 7 points are pretty good as a free option. You don't necessarily have to take them, though, I think, because at the end of the day, they only really work if you have a lot of Warjacks, and you might be putting Battle Mages on the table instead. Let's see how you go. I think this kind of list will encourage a lot more also of the Jack Marshalling type of deal. Like, you'll see more Crushed Hydras on the table, and stuff that's messing around with Alara. And as I said, Disco being in theme in general is pretty good for this list. Now, next up is Legions of Dawn, which basically has changed. It no longer has that flank benefit it used to have, which is
important.
Yeah, that was a shame.
It was busted, but it was pretty cool.
It was really hard to pull off, but when it pulled off, it was very spectacular. Flank in general is just not a thing.
My light jack just removed a colossal.
Yeah, that's just the thing that happens every day in Retribution Land. So, added Imperatus, Ghost Sniper, Fane Guardian, Harshail Artificer, Lisk.
They added the Fane Knight?
Yeah, they gave him to pretty much everyone.
Oh, the Guardian, the Fane Knight.
The solo guy.
Okay.
They're
both
dog.
Solos.
Yeah, the Fane Dog. And Solus Trancer. Again, like, I'm not sure why he's there, but whatever.
Tracer.
Sid Tracer.
Anti-magic stuff.
I guess. Anyway.
It's just adding support to the different themes because there was no overlap before, and a lot of the themes don't have a lot of support built in.
Yep.
So they're adding a lot of the support that were kind of everywhere else and adding them to spice up actual list building.
Yep. In this case, I guess, like, you get some anti-magic options to go with your anti-shooting option from your House Shire or other.
Right.
So, anyway, every 20 points of Dawnguard, you now just get a command attachment or a small or medium-based solo. No free fucking, Death of Thanes. I remember some people campaigning for that, if I'm not mistaken. You guys can fuck right off.
Well, I mean, they already have one Cav Solo for free in the faction, so it doesn't surprise me they'd ask for more.
Yep. So, this is an interesting one. As I said, instead of a flank, you get the benefit of Retribution Warjacks' army can ignore Dawnguard models when determining line of sight.
They have Tactician.
They have Tactician.
Which means when you add a model with Tactician to the infantry, that everything's just fucking moving through each other.
Yeah, the infantry cannot move through the Warjacks.
But the Jacks can move through the infantry.
Now, that's actually quite interesting, because apart from Ossian, this kind of benefit hasn't been put into a lot of things, like Jacks moving through infantry.
Ossian, you mean Ostrom?
Sorry, Ostrom. That guy. That fuckwit. Now,
I mean, Ossian's a cool guy, but he doesn't do that.
No, he's not that tactically flexible. He's not that strategic.
No, he's time manipulating.
Yep. And I'll be honest, like, adding Tactician to a lot of lists does weird stuff. Like, we were just spent the first half of this cast, like, graving about how flexible Vlad is. One of the reasons why is he just casually has Tactician from Artanis. And
that list really benefits from having Tactician.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I missed with the Butcher list.
Mm.
It means, like, you can really tightly pack your models, and even then the battle engine can move through them.
You cannot jam Armored Core if they have Tactician. It is fucking impossible.
Yeah, you just walk, speed on a strike tanker, and walks through the army and then sprays across the line in a way that it avoids hitting any of the models.
Like, it'll take a while for the Kador player to figure out how he's going to do it, but if you give him basically as much, like, X amount of time, he will just unjam himself, no matter how turbo jammed you think he is, because all of the attacks will be applied in such an efficient manner. Now, not everyone can do this in Retribution, but, and as an aside, like, Tactician with models that are faster than base speed is also incredibly strong. Hence one of the strengths of Ostrom. But yeah, you can try and do this in Retribution and replicate this effect. Like, you can basically have Imperatus or someone else be used as your unjam piece, so you have a cloud of Dawnguard, and you basically have some beatstick heavy in the back pocket. Even can just be Sirens and the like. A lot of lists just really benefit from having a model that can be used as a problem solver, and I don't see why Dawnguard wouldn't be one of those. Like, put it this way, there's a reason I put Kaiazi Eliminators in my list. There's a reason why you have stuff like Golam randomly show up in Primal Terrors from time to time, and why the list in Mark II back when you could feat back a Blightbringer, also randomly had stuff like Grotesque Assassins. There's a really good benefit for having these kind of problem-solver models. So I'd be curious to see how Dawnguard play with that, and especially Imperatus. Because you could have Imperatus basically be the ultimate unjamming piece of shit guy who's just there to effectively mean your Dawnguard clump cannot be stalled, and you have also a way of having Imperatus live through multiple turns, which is good. Oh, and also you get plus one to go first. Which is a great benefit, because going first is awesome.
Yep. Next we got Shadows of Retribution.
Tom, do you want to go through this one?
No, I don't actually know what the exact thing would
take. Okay, Tom, you're not going through this one. Brian,
Moros is now allowed in the default.
That is correct.
It's Moros, the List Healer, and again, the Fae Knight Guardian.
The change to the second tier benefits, so for every 20 points of Retribution units in the army, you can add one Retribution Command Attachment or Retribution Solo free of cost. And the fourth benefit is one unit of Mage Hunter Infiltrators without Command Attachment gain Ambush, which I believe we spoke about earlier.
Yep. Shadows in general is just a really good theme. Actually, weirdly, there was one benefit I don't think has been discussed, is I think the Spears of Syra also got Repo 3. But yeah, so Shadows is, like, it's always been one of those solid themes I'm to like.
Did they?
Well, that's the thing. I'm going to double check it, because Tommen was saying that yesterday. And that would be quite nice. Yeah, Tom, go ahead.
Basically, Moros was always in his weird spot because he was like a really good beast that was like that enabled a lot of things because his guns had paralysis, and he was like he was sitting in kind of the same spot Kingthorn does, where he's like a really solid light jack that has stealth, but you couldn't really take him anywhere because like no themes could take him before, and like, you didn't really want to play Gareth in Moros' case.
Yeah.
But now that he's allowed in Shadows of Retribution, you can actually do a lot of cool things with it.
You can
especially
take him.
Since.
Oh, go on, sorry.
Especially since he's beast 7 with 1-inch melee, and let's case you can Crusaders call him, give him fleet, and that is like the 15-inch threat of paralysis.
Oh, fuck, he got fleet right too. Yeah.
Yeah. And he has parry.
Yeah.
He can get places.
So, to me, the big one here is you can take Alara as well in this theme, and you can Speed of Death this guy, and then you just have, you know, refuging Moros, and Moros can flee basically with parry. Seems fine.
Which is also called the. Because he looks like a Speed Jack, it makes the Speed of Death really fun.
Yeah, pretty much. Fast. Side note, there's a couple of, I guess there's a couple of undocumented changes here, but one of them is that Spears of Syra do in fact have Repo 3, just base, which is nice.
That is acceptable.
Yep. Not really sure what they'll be using it for, but I mean, Repo 3 is just a good rule to have. Nothing wrong with it. Mage Hunter.
I believe that's all the pink.
I think that's all of them, yeah. I would double-check a couple of them. There are a couple of casters that haven't really been improved, like poor Gareth, unfortunately.
There was a girl playing Gareth at the day. So
yeah, there was.
Confirmed to be very good.
Yep, fair enough. All right.
Yeah.
Good enough to play at the WTC. No changes required. Get wrecked.
Yep.
I think we might see a reoccurrence of Ossian in the current meta with these changes.
Yes. So I think that rolls into probably our next topic and something around out. Now that we've had the WTC, a couple of events have gone forward. We can start looking towards the future, because we've got a couple of events coming up that are pretty big that will involve models that weren't really present in big quantities at the WTC. And one of those is Crucible Guard in general. That faction by War Machine Weekend will pretty much have everything it needs. Maybe not the train, but it will have a lot more. And you'd probably be expecting...
It might not have as much as we think. It depends on when it is during the month.
Sure. War Machine Weekend is the start of the month, so you might have some...
Because the trains and stuff come out... No, so the trains and stuff come out in November, so it depends on how early those things get released.
Or if they get pre-released at the con.
Sure.
Yeah. And then the second is that, you have Retribution itself. And the third, to me, is that you also have Menoth hitting the meta in a big way, because it's Menoth.
Congrats to Jack for winning Moab.
Yes. Do you know how he won Moab?
Yeah. Drifts. It was very,
Tokyo drifting.
Very funny.
Yep. Poor fucking... So, under Rask's feet, with two sprays and some random lucky drifts, he fucking kills the snake on bottom? Top of two?
Did Colin get in the finals as well?
Yeah, Colin got in the finals. After a bit of a clusterfuck, he beat me, which was good. Because I didn't...
Because Chris is not allowed to win local events.
Yeah, and I also didn't really want to play into Jack.
You don't want to get posted about the adjudicator.
I would like the Judicator to win more events so that fucking thing gets looked at. Jesus Christ. All right.
So that when Chris, if he goes to the next event, he'll take Menoth with him and win super hard with the Judicator and get it nerfed.
See about that. I might be getting Kato nerfed again, guys. Just watch the space. But yeah, the Judicator is effectively, like... This is actually something possibly a bit down the line I'd be curious about, but they're probably at some point going to do a dynamic update involving the first round of nerfs of models that have gone through CID. And the Judicator is the one people talk about a lot, but another one would be the Hellmouth. And there's a lot of people who ramble, oh, the Hellmouth never went through CID proper, and it was definitely a sticking point in that Primal Terrors CID as to whether the Hellmouth counted or not, because it's been such a big part of those lists.
I only played one.
Yeah, I know, and you still won with that one Hellmouth.
Yeah.
How much did that one Hellmouth do?
Basically won, like, both games.
Yeah, funny that. Now imagine what happened if you had two Hellmouths.
Yeah, I mean, it was very hard for, like, people to kill one. I actually don't know how you would kill two.
You get lucky on one of them, and then the second one you wait until turn six when you finally get to kill it.
Yeah. So yes, that model is very absurd.
Well, when you get down to it, the Hellmouth is another one of those models I mentioned earlier that effectively abuses terrain like nobody's business. There's nothing quite as annoying as a Hellmouth behind a building that you can't get to, and that is just going to put tentacles in your zone forever.
The one benefit if it's behind a building is it's never pulling your heavies quite to their death automatically.
Yeah, correct.
Just mostly.
Or getting them...
It's still dead, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because he's making the threat range of every other model in his army, like, huge.
Yeah.
And then you're getting charged by power 18 warmongers.
Yep.
Then Matt 13.
Why am I sad? Oh, I know. It's Hellmouths.
Yeah, pretty much. Obviously, if they're behind a forest and you can't ignore a forest, then it's even better, because then you do pull them to their deaths. And you can counterplay around a Hellmouth. You can do tricks like basically putting your models behind, well, not behind buildings, but like perpendicular to each other so they can't be pulled. And you can use a bunch of immune to pulling models and terrain. But realistically speaking, it's just super fucking hard.
Yes, it's very difficult because it costs 6 points.
Yeah. Well,
free.
It costs a free card. Yeah. The reason why it's super difficult is that you're playing the game still. So as the game goes on, you start losing pieces to get block Hellmouth pulls and do whatnot. Like, it's quite likely that you just have your model that was going to block the Hellmouth get killed by Ogryn, and then the Hellmouth pulls the other guy in to its death. And then... Why am I looking at a Teletubby? Who would you like us to have interviewed the meta for Retribution? Well, all right. Tom, get on it. Yeah, okay. You can interview Jeff as well. That's true.
I would also like to point out that randomly the mall itself is like health 15.
Yeah.
So, like, it was like doing things like the let's go pull something in and with the library activated. So it would get hit by a pal 12 and then get hit by a pal 17 and then get hit by another pal 6.1, which is like, wow, this is the most absurd thing that's ever happened.
Yeah. I think the worst thing about the Hellmouth, to be honest, is the fact that way it interacts with models that weren't really tested for it, like the Blightbringer to some degree, but also just the fucking objective. There's nothing quite as tilting.
Oh, stick it next to the objective so it heals every turn.
There's nothing quite as tilting as that at all. And a power 18, an armor 18 Hellmouth, you actually can kill in a lot of cases. Like
armor
most 20? Most heavies roll straight dice against that. It's when you put a heavy into it and you cannot kill it. Then you know you've got a serious problem.
I think
yeah, like 122 with P-Tag. It was absurd.
Yeah.
I think on average a Juggernaut doesn't kill it.
Yeah, what the fuck? You need a threat buff there to kill a free solo, and you're trading a heavy to do so, like, for the privilege.
Oh, I'd do that. Take that every day.
Yeah. God damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that would be one. The Judicator itself, like, look, to be honest, I don't think this Judicator was ever properly tested, and it's, I guess, one of the things with CID and how it works, because everything is a structural set way it's gone. The thing with the Judicator is that... So, they have done aggressive changes to a lot of Colossals, like the Blightbringer, the Victor, and the Judicator, and honestly, the Hyperion as well. The big thing with the Judicator, like, and they've done them late in the piece... Like, the Victor on the final week of the Armored Core CID lost inaccurate. The Hyperion on the final week basically dropped to 32 points and gained its range benefit to its main gun. And, yeah, like, these changes were good, excellent, but the thing is they only really affect one attack of these models. Like, the Victor's fucking main gun is incredibly good, but it is just one shot. If you can make it two shots, that's fine, but you're still, in a lot of cases, just making one. The Judicator is quite different. For one, it was never tested in its full combo of Exemplar Interdiction, Sub-Zero, and it being at 34 points.
With Hieroclamber.
Well, not even with just Hieroclamber, with its Hand of Fate ability.
That's full combo.
Yeah.
It's double Hand of Fate, Sub-Zero, with Blast.
Yes. And... when you get down to it, and during the CID, it was never actually tested this way, because Sub-Zero CID was after the Exemplar one, at least to my knowledge. Might be wrong on that one. Either way, Sub-Zero and the Judicator were never actually properly integrated together and tested. Furthermore, the change to the Judicator's like Hand of Fate thing was quite late in the piece as well. Its main change over the other ones is the fact that the Judicator has fucking sprays and rockets, so... instead of multiplying the effectiveness of one shot, you're instead making every shot that thing does so much better.
And it's melee.
And it's melee, just casually. Like
that ability is just fucking absurd.
Yeah. The funny thing is, like, the melee attack, you can just sort of accept that because, end of the day, like, the way
it's game,
it's a model that kills... if you're getting punched in the face by a Colossal, generally speaking, you're just fucked.
Agreed.
You're not really expecting that to go any other way unless your Colossal is like a light or something like that, or you're punching into an armor.
Or a Storm Raptor.
Yeah, a Storm Raptor, if you fail to kill a Storm Raptor, I don't know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
If the Storm Raptor fails to kill you, well, that's just par for the course as far as I'm concerned.
That just appetizes.
Yeah. But like, the Storm Raptor's gone through a lot of changes as well. What do you think about those?
I'm pretty happy with it. I know people who aren't, but we're not gonna go to the Frawley area battles on this cast. So.
No, but tell us what you think about its current state.
As a foremost expert of Storm Raptor technology,
as the Derpy Turkey expert,
yes.
So Mass 6 very good. Getting access to 3 shots is pretty okay. Losing lightning generator sucks. The pulse is pretty mean. Overall, it's like and being 34 points is a big upgrade. Like, let's first just say it out loud that nothing on that card deserves 38 points. There's not enough need on the board in the world.
How is a Hyperion less points in this model?
Because red preppers. But the point is, it is now semi playable, and by that I mean some people meme with it, and then that's about it.
So Tom's gonna win an American event with it, is what I'm hearing.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Locked it in.
I'm looking forward to you basically.
WTC. No, sorry, not WTC. War Machine Weekend, Tom.
Yep.
I have to go to a Weave concert, and the CID won't be out by then.
Yeah, but aren't you playing in the last chance qualifier anyway?
Yeah.
Just win the
Legion challenge. Remember?
Yeah, that's right. We should talk about it actually. So, Tom and Jack basically made a wager, which was that if I went better, if I won more games than I lost, so I had to deliberately win at least 4 games, and we're not doing any, like, halvesies measures here, no, I'd have to win more games than I lost, Then Tom would get the privilege of playing Animag in Oracles of Annihilation with a beautiful list.
Yes.
Does he have to? Can he pair it with the Fags 1 list that he played at WTC?
You know what? He is now going to. We are now altering the deal, Tom. You are going to play that as a pair.
Yeah, no, Jack offered the Theron 1 list, which is either better or worse up to debate.
Right. Well, that was the problem, right? After I said, haha, Tom, you're going to have to play Animag, it was like, yeah, it can't be worse than what you're playing so today. And I had no answer to that because it was very true.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm going to play the LCQ with it, and I have to leave the morning after to go to a concert, so if I win the LCQ, it's going to be really funny.
Double memed.
Yeah. And Jack's taking his to Taz.
No, Jack won that bet, unfortunately. Because he bet on me to win.
Oh, did he? Okay. Yeah.
Which may have been him.
First did, so he called Chris for wins. I think Chris.
To be fair, I'm also not having to play Animag, so I'm thankful for that. Nothing quite like a side bet like that to get you a win record up. You should try it next year, Brian.
If I go next year.
Yeah.
I think I might do some other stuff.
Lee Caleb, as you can play.
Mm. Oh, yeah?
There's some like Shrek up 2 and there's some Lab 3. There's up.
I'm out.
Well, you had me at Shrek off 2 and then you didn't have me at Lab 3.
Yeah, pretty much. Like Shrek off 2!
That's a sweet pair, also. Oh, man.
What does Shrek off 2 look like?
It was the armor core list we built on the Patch
Book. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Shoot, what is it?
Huh?
I'm always interested to yell at other people's Kate all this for being wrong. Come on. What the hell is it?
I don't know what version we ended up deciding, but the gist of it was like two max units of shock troopers with two UAs, and then like a full unit of demo core with Dragos, and then like two free
suppression tankers.
Two free tankers. And then, like, Norbert wanted Iron a hole in the list, and then there was the Brigand and the Rage. But very custom, very changeable.
Okay, this sounds just like a fucking Strakov 2 list. This doesn't even have any memes. This isn't like the last time after a WTC we came up with a list, which was like Kyle 1 with 3 units of Bog Trogs.
No, we were trying to, like make them come down the middle and go for, like, a spell assassination with Kyle 1 with, like, Megalith. But yeah, if people want to bet on Chris's record at any tournament, I would gladly take them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you better odds when he's playing local tournaments, because that's a free win for anyone involved.
Well, I flip-flop, see? Like, if I win doing good at local tournaments, I can't do well at the WTC and vice versa.
Yeah, we don't need a Chris of 2017 ever again.
Oh, maybe you could. Anyway, I think that wraps up our cast quite nicely, so...
Yeah.
Thanks. Oh, no, wait. We have one more thing.
Yep.
We want to shout out the Australian Super Series.
Oh, yeah. True. So, for anyone listening in Australia, in November the 2nd / 3rd / 4th, that sort of weekend, the Super Series is on again. It's basically... 2nd is the Friday. So, basically, November the 3rd and the 4th is the Super Series event. There will be an LCQ. It's a qualifying tournament. We're starting it up again this year, and we're hoping to build it up for the next year as well. But come along, and it should be a good fun. It is in Brisbane this year at Irresistible Force.
Hosted by Gigantor?
Yeah, hosted by Josh. He couldn't make it today, but we got him here.
He's super keen for it. He's hoping it's going to promote more travel between tournaments, because he'll start doing a... he's hoping that it'll bring people out more, because he noticed that when it went down last time that we saw less travel throughout Australia. So we're hoping to hopefully grow the scene a bit more again and get people traveling and going to other events and seeing how well they do.
Which actually is a thing we should probably get into in some other time, is basically the effect of traveling and going to other cons, because it is a thing with a lot of tournaments I find with America, is like one of the reasons people travel so is to get LCQ spots for the last chance qualifier. And look,
I had a lot of fun at the last Super Series I played in, the LCQ, because I didn't play any Australian tournaments, so I had to
go in the gauntlet,
and then Dylan was not pleased when I won the gauntlet, and then he like failed a really really good assassination on me, and then I did a really unlikely assassination on him. That was really fun.
Yeah. Did you go all the way through? I thought you went 3-1, and then someone gave you their spot, but I'm not sure.
No, I went 4-0 in the gauntlet. I was playing, I beat one of the Brisbane locals, and I played Ben Middleton, I remember.
I forgot
the other guy, other people's names.
Ben's a good guy.
Yeah. And I played Dylan, I won. I lost to I forgot who I lost to in the Super Series. Mm. I beat Dylan, I lost to someone, I beat Deno in the More Nebra versus Gorshay 3 off, and then I won against someone else. And I won the sword they give out for people beating Deno for whatever reason.
Yep, done.
Which Colin still has at his house.
Nice.
Well, there you go. If you want to win a sword, well, I can't guarantee it for this year's Super Series, but we'll see what we can make happen for next year's one.
Also, for anyone, please... If you see Jack Ding, please ask him about what happened in the finals that year. he'll tell you about it.
Ask Colin as well.
Please tell him I sent you.
So what you need to say is go up to Jack and says, Tom wanted me to ask what happened in the 2017 Super Series finals. 2016? 2015? I don't know. Yeah, it wasn't last year.
What happened in the Super Series final against Colin?
Sure, there you go.
Yeah.
And on that note, I'd like to thank everyone for listening. This was a bit of a roundabout recap of WTC and RET CID and the like. And look, we're kind of now, the thing with the WTC is it marks a bit of a cutoff during the year. Basically, when the WTC rolls around, a lot of people stop caring about what the new releases are for the future because their lists are sort of locked in and they have to care about the here and now. But that's all past, which means that we have a brand new exciting meta for
Well, that's more. For us. In the US, they still have War Machine Weekend.
Well, that's the thing. We have CanCon coming up. There's
well, that's still like 3 months away.
Sure, but that's still plenty of time to come up with more bullshit.
Yes, for us.
We also have the Super Series coming up, as we just said.
That's true.
Yeah, there's just... It's a time now for basically more bullshit lists to come out in the meta, more oppressive stuff to get going, more refinement, pretty much everything involved under the sun.
Yep, so hopefully we'll have some more interesting topics coming up. If you have any suggestions, you can send it to us on Facebook, or you can email me at darkguidancegaming@gmail.com.
We'll probably do
for any suggestions.
We have an email?
Yeah, we do.
Yep.
Oh my god.
We're now professionals, mate.
Yeah, sure.
Chris, you cannot be using that word like that. That is an insult to professionals at work.
Oh, screw you. I'm a professional.
We don't even get paid for this.
Yeah, well, next time round, we'll probably have either a faction cast or we might get one of the other guys who's involved in the WTC, or both, because that's always fun. We can go into some of the stuff involving Osram. Who the fuck knows? Hit us up what you want us to talk about, and we might pay attention to it.
Yeah, I think we've had some really good suggestions already. One was about growing the meta. That's something I'd like to talk about, but we need to get somebody
specific. We need to actually
on.
Be able to grow the meta first.
Or have somebody who's actually successfully done it. Because right now, Sydney's not in a position where we can really talk about it much. Mm-hmm. But we have had some good suggestions, and we're looking at any more we might get.
In any case, though, thanks to you all for listening, and good day.
Good night.
Good afternoon.